Finding the right words to help somebody who is grieving or have a loved one in palliative care or in intensive care, for instance, can be really, really difficult. And yet, it's a test of your communication and leadership skills to be able to do just that. By being a supportive team member, manager, or leader, you can make a huge difference. So here are some tips and tricks that I learnt during my time on a palliative ward when I was younger, mixed with my insights as a communication coach. If you have an international team, you might need to be aware of some cultural differences. So this episode is designed to help you prepare for that situation. Feel free to share this with other colleagues, maybe even your HR department, because I feel that this is a topic that not many people are talking about, and yet it's something that affects every single one of us. So doesn't it make sense to be the one who can be more compassionate, more supportive, and more in tune with your team members? Welcome to the Experts Speak English podcast. Together, we'll discover how to talk yourself into an international career without the bullshit. And at the end of each episode, I give you an opportunity to try out what you have just learned on the show, because I give you Coco's Communication Challenge. And that gives you an opportunity to get out there and try out one of the tools, techniques, or tips that you will have heard on the show. I'm Corinne Wilhelm. I'm a corporate communication coach with over 20 years' experience of helping leaders to secure the career that they deserve through intentional communication, intercultural awareness, and the confidence to show up as the English-speaking expert. So let's get cracking, shall we? Communication that embraces grief at work. Grief is one of the most heart-wrenching things that you can experience. And yet, no matter how many times you experience it, you can experience grief in so many ways. You may cry, despair, question your religious beliefs, be angry, or completely helpless. Grief is not a one-size-fits-all. Grief affects us all differently, whether it's you, your colleague, your client, or your suppliers. Mourning the loss of a loved one, even a former partner, can be painful, confusing, and distracting. This episode will talk about the communication around grief and what you can do to help people who you work with to process their grief. Grieving process 101. Sorry, there is none. The way that grief is embraced or ignored in different cultures can vary significantly. In some cultures, grief is openly acknowledged and discussed with warmth and understanding, whereas in other cultures, this might barely be mentioned and seen as a more private or personal matter. There is no way to know, and there might be someone on your team who has suffered a loss and never mentioned anything. The older we get, the more predictable death becomes. But if you are a loved one, that doesn't make it any less painful. Cultural differences in terms of dealing with grief are worth taking a look at, especially if you have a very international team. In Western cultures, we tend to openly express our emotions and will often seek support from others during times of grief. And grief support groups and therapy are fairly common practices, thank goodness, and it's generally accepted to take time off work or other responsibilities to process and cope with the loss. Having said that, in some Western cultures, the expectation is to suck it up and get on with it. Not exactly supportive or conducive to mental well-being, but culture is ingrained in our beliefs and values and cannot be switched on and off like a light switch. Culture evolves over generations. So somebody in a mixed race marriage, for example, might be torn between both of these cultures around grief. In contrast, some Eastern cultures may place more emphasis on that stiff upper lip and restraint when faced with grief. showing your emotions in public might well be perceived as being inappropriate, even shameful. Instead, more subtle approaches are taken, such as wearing dark clothing or performing rituals, and these are used to express grief in a more subtle way. In some indigenous cultures, grief is more of a community, collective experience that is shared by both friends and family. Mourning practices may involve specific rituals or ceremonies, and the bereaved family don't just get immediate support, but ongoing support from their community long after the loss has occurred. Because let's face it, grief is a process, and everybody deals with grief in their own unique way. And depending on whether you have had closure, this process can take a lot longer than you feel that you can bear, with waves of grief that are completely unpredictable and unfathomable. The slightest thing can trigger a low point, and these can be minutes, hours, days, or weeks. Grief stereotypes. Beware. Now, within any culture, there are subcultures, and we are all individuals in our own right, and culture does not prescribe our behaviour. It can, however, help us to categorise reactions to grief. So please forgive these rather broad generalisations. Anybody who has experienced my intercultural awareness coaching will know that I have a very strong standpoint on making sweeping generalisations and stereotypes. But it provides a basis of understanding from which we can explore further. And likewise, people of different generations will deal with grief differently. So even within a family, there will be different approaches to grief and different behaviours around that grieving, especially in families that are geographically spread and embracing different religions. So let's talk about compassionate leave. Compassionate leave, also referred to as bereavement leave, is something that some employers offer their employees, others don't. It gives them the opportunity to take time off work following the death of a loved one, to kind of get themselves together. The availability and duration of compassionate leave varies significantly from culture to culture and country to country, and even within different regions or industries within a country. So in general, countries with more robust employment laws tend to have more generous compassionate leave policies. The availability and duration of compassionate leave varies significantly from country to country, and even within different regions or industries. In general, countries required to conform to strict employment laws tend to have more generous compassionate leave policies. Some countries, such as Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom, require employers to offer a certain amount of compassionate leave to employees. For example, in Australia, employees are entitled to 2 days of compassionate leave each time that they are faced with this dreadful situation, while in the United Kingdom, employees are entitled to a minimum of 2 weeks off following the death of a child, for instance. In the United States, employers are not legally required to offer any compassionate leave. However, some employers may offer it as a benefit, if you like. And some states, for example, Oregon, requires employers to offer up to 2 weeks of bereavement leave for the death of a family member. So it's worth noting then that even in countries where compassionate leave is offered, the amount of leave may not be sufficient for some employees or may not be available to all types of employees depending on the work that you're doing. So clearly, if you are self-employed or working on a contract basis, you will be grateful for flexible, understanding clients and might have to cut yourself some slack to be able to process your grief. It's tempting as a self-employed person to dive into work, but this does not help you to process the grief. It just puts it on hold. It's like trying to stop the flow of a fast-running river. You might be able to stop the flow temporarily, but nature will run its course and the water will break through, often at a very inopportune moment, in a way that is very out of character. So if you should ever suffer from grief, pushing it under the carpet is really not advisable. So if you are given the opportunity to work internationally and you have aging parents, you might want to ask about compassionate leave, as you will need additional travel time and you might well have to go twice to say farewell, maybe if they are in palliative care, and again for the funeral, and take time to take care of property, financial and legal issues, etc., as well as your family's emotional needs. This all takes time, and very often you will have to take some holiday. So it's advisable not to max out on your holiday leave if your parents or parents-in-law are becoming weaker and more dependent. In the United Kingdom, where I come from, employees are entitled to a minimum of 2 weeks of paid leave following the death of a child, for instance. There's no set amount of leave for other types of bereavement, but most employers offer a few days of paid leave, you know, just as a benefit or just because it's the decent thing to do. You can imagine then how shocked I was to discover that here in Germany, where I've been based for over 20 years now, there is no legal requirement for compassionate leave at all. Although in recent years, more and more employers do offer a few days of paid leave as a benefit or as a token of their appreciation and understanding. In France, you can expect 3 days of paid bereavement leave for the death of a spouse, child, parent or sibling. And interestingly, you also get a day of paid leave for the death of a grandparent, parent-in-law or grandchild. Although in reality, that would probably be the day of the funeral, I guess. I will include the amount of compassionate leave that you can expect in a few different countries in the show notes for this show. So what about the Japanese culture? This is a very interesting case because these people like to deal with grief privately. Now, in Japan, where grief is typically expressed in a very reserved and private manner, there is very much an emphasis on maintaining emotional composure so as to avoid making others feel uncomfortable. And the traditional Japanese concept of grief is called mibonsei, with an emphasis on personal emotional control and social harmony. When someone passes away, it's customary for family members to hold a funeral and cremate the body. In the days following the funeral, family members may participate in a period of mourning called koden. This is the time in which they receive condolences and gifts from friends and acquaintances. It's also common for a family member to continue to wear black clothing for a period of time as a sign of mourning. In the Japanese culture, it's considered important to honour the memory of the deceased through practices such as visiting their grave regularly, making offerings of food or incense, and participating in annual memorial services. And these practices are seen as a way of, you know, maintaining a connection with the deceased and ensuring their continued spiritual well-being. Overall, Japanese culture places a strong emphasis on respect for the deceased and their family, all the time being careful not to draw too much attention to themselves or making those around them feel awkward or affected. So due to this ritual, Japanese employers would normally offer between 1 and 5 days of paid bereavement leave, depending on your family proximity to the deceased. Now, as an employer or team lead, you need to be aware of the fact that grief and loss can be a significant trigger for depression and other mental health issues. So many individuals experience mental health challenges following the loss of a loved one. And the severity of mental health issues during mourning can vary depending on a whole range of factors, such as the individual's age, their gender, their cultural background, and, you know, even the nature of the loss. And I will come on to suicide specifically a bit later. Now, according to the American Psychiatric Association, major depression is common after losing a loved one. They estimate that up to 20% of individuals who experience a significant loss will develop depression. And additionally, some studies have suggested that up to 50% of individuals who experience complicated grief, so that's a more severe and prolonged form of grief, may also experience depression. Now, other health issues to watch out for in the office, in addition to anxiety, are post-traumatic stress disorder and substance abuse. These are triggered by stress and trauma of the loss, as well as the social and cultural factors that can affect an individual's grief experience. So not everyone is at risk from mental health issues. In fact, many individuals are able to successfully navigate the grieving process with support from loved ones or mental health professionals. However, if an individual is experiencing significant distress or impairment in their daily functioning following a loss, it may be important for them to speak to you about their issues at work. And you, in turn, as an employer or boss, can encourage them to seek professional support to address any mental health concerns. And let them do that during work time. Don't make them, you know, jump through hoops to do that. So your understanding and flexibility at this stage will help you to secure the long-term loyalty of an employee that in today's employment market would be difficult to replace and costly to train and get on board with onboarding. So demonstrate some compassion and empathy by creating the time and space for grieving individuals to open up to you and reach out for support. Supporting staff members who are grieving is not something that everyone feels comfortable doing, but losing a loved one is a really difficult experience, and it's not uncommon for individuals to struggle with focusing on work or other tasks in the aftermath of a loss. So what can you do if someone is clearly struggling to focus at work during this period of mourning that's a very necessary part of the process? Well, first of all, you can encourage them to take some time off. Be flexible. Depending on the nature of the loss and the individual's job, it may be appropriate for them to take some time off work to really focus on themselves and the grieving process. This could include using vacation days, sick leave, or compassionate leave if that's available. And this is particularly important if they are working with dangerous machinery or chemicals, for example, or if they are facing clients on a regular basis. Now, number two is to offer them some flexibility. If your team member is unable to take time off, you can offer them flexibility in their work schedule or their workload. This could include allowing them to work from home, reducing their workload temporarily, or offering more flexible deadlines. Give them the opportunity to get to work before everyone else, perhaps. You know, this just gives them that opportunity to come in without actually having to speak to many people. It can be tempting to stay at work longer to avoid going to the silent void at home or the emotional tension in your family, but working hours should be monitored. If people are working in an agile setting, you could maybe pull them out of a sprint and give them some other necessary tasks that are maybe in the backlog or something. Give them a bit of a break. Number three, provide the support that they need. Be authentic here. This person is struggling, so let the employee know that you are there to support them, both emotionally and professionally. I suggest checking in with them discreetly and regularly. Offer them counselling services or give them information of resources such as support groups or bereavement leave. Of course, they could find this out themselves, but by you giving it to them, the stigma around accepting support is reduced or maybe even eliminated completely. Number four is to encourage them to take care of themselves. Now, don't just tell them, join them. Get them to join you for lunch to make sure that they actually eat something. If they cannot face the canteen, go out to a local restaurant or cafe. It's not enough to say, hey, are you getting enough sleep? You look tired. Instead, you can share your tactics when you have struggled with sleep in the past. Or you can bring them an apple when you come back from a client. You see, it's these small gestures that go a long way and say loud and clear, I see you, I'm here for you, and if you need to talk, I'm here. If you jog, encourage them to come with you. If you take a walk around the block for a blast of fresh air at lunchtime, ask them to join you. Ask them if you can pick their brains about something at work. You can be there for your staff without moving in with them. Just be available. And as I discussed in a previous episode about professional distance, you can always start and end the conversation with job-related questions to wrap your empathy in professionalism. Now, number five is to be patient and understanding. Now, I know we're all up against our deadlines and targets and things like this, but remember that grief is a completely normal and natural process, a process that we all have to experience at some point. And everyone, so be approachable, listen and acknowledge their grief, be patient and understanding with your grieving employee, and be observant so that you can offer them the right support and flexibility as they navigate this challenging period in their life. Their loyalty to you afterwards will be very touching and rewarding, and it's the decent thing to do. You never know when you will be in this situation and might need some more flexibility and empathy yourself. If grief affects performance long term, what do you do then? Well, if the employee's grief is having an impact on their ability to function in their job over an extended period of time, it may be necessary to explore other career options, such as a leave of absence or a different role. Encourage the employee to seek professional help if they are struggling with their grief, and provide them with the resources they need to prioritise their mental health and well-being. Don't make this seem like a punishment. Make it an opportunity to help them, to provide a more grief-compatible career, if you like. So losing a child, how on earth do you help? So what about the millions of parents who need to cope with losing a child in pregnancy or afterwards? Remember that this affects the fathers as much as the mothers, and of course any siblings or grandparents, especially if the child is a little older. Losing a child, whether during pregnancy or after birth, is a devastating experience for parents. Coping with such a loss can be a challenging and complex process, and everyone's experience is different. Parents should be encouraged to take the time they need to process their grief, and they should take advantage of support groups and professional advice. Losing a child is often laden with feelings of guilt, and these emotions, they need to be worked through. So the grief timeline, how long will it take? There is no set timeline for grief, and the experience of grief is different for everyone. Grief is a normal and natural process that individuals go through after a significant loss. It can take weeks, months, or even years for an individual to really come to terms with their loss and begin to heal. It's agonizingly slow at times, and you feel as if you have no control over the process. And unfortunately, there's no fast forward button. And while the intensity of grief may lessen over time, the loss never goes away. One of the last sentences that my grandmother said to me before she died was, "It's time to join my Julia, who was the daughter that died as a child." The loss becomes less heart-wrenching, but it kind of follows you like a shadow of consciousness, sometimes darker and sadder, other times light-hearted and warmer. However, with time and support, you do learn to cope with your loss, and although life is never really the same, you do start to establish a new version of normal. Please remember that there is no right way to grieve. There is nothing you can do to speed up the process or put it on hold or make it go away. It's important for your staff to take the time to process their emotions and find ways to cope with their loss. Seeking support from loved ones, support groups or mental health professionals can be extremely helpful in navigating the grieving process and developing healthy coping strategies away from alcohol, drugs, eating obsessions and so on. So let's talk about time off. Having the opportunity to say goodbye in a palliative situation or to make amends can provide a sense of closure that can help with the grieving process. If someone asks to have time off to see a very sick parent, for example, be understanding about that. Not everyone has the opportunity to say goodbye, and some losses may be sudden or unexpected. Don't be the kind of boss that prevented someone from being able to say goodbye. Be flexible. be compassionate. And if they don't have any holiday left, for goodness sake, make an exception or find a workaround. Now, suicide. This is an even tougher one to deal with due to the stigma and guilt that goes with that. Grief after the loss of a loved one to suicide can be a complex and challenging experience. In a suicide case, there is a lot of stigma and finger pointing, unfortunately. And if you want to secure a safe space at work, you need to tackle that. There should be zero tolerance for judgment or finger pointing. There can be stigma attached to suicide that may make it difficult for those grieving to seek the support that they deserve or talk openly about their loss. They may feel shame, guilt, or blame themselves for not preventing the suicide, even, of course, if it wasn't their fault. Unanswered questions. Suicide often leaves loved ones with unanswered questions about why their loved one took their own life, which can create a sense of confusion, anger, and sadness. And the trauma that goes with that is very real. Witnessing or discovering the aftermath of a loved one's suicide can be traumatic. And that may further complicate the grieving process because it was so very visual. Feelings of abandonment are also an issue. Those grieving after suicide may feel abandoned or rejected by their loved one. Then there's social isolation. Suicide can often be a taboo subject, and some people may distance themselves from those who have experienced a loss with this suicide label, and that leaves the bereaved feeling exceptionally isolated and unsupported. Then there's the increased risk for mental health issues. So those who have lost a loved one to suicide may be at an even higher risk for developing mental health issues such as depression, anxiety, or post-traumatic stress disorder, otherwise known as PTSD. So suicide loss is tough, and individuals who are grieving after a suicide loss may benefit from specialised support and resources such as support groups or therapy with a mental health professional who is experienced in working with this particular type of loss. So be aware that there are many logistical and financial responsibilities and tasks that need to be taken care of before and after a funeral, all of which are time consuming, emotionally draining, and they might well need to be done during office hours. So be understanding about that and flexible. It doesn't take more than a couple of weeks, but it is a kind and considerate gesture to give them this time, as it is all part of the closure process. So what about if you are the person grieving? What are my tips for helping you to cope with grief in a healthy way? If you find yourself grieving, there are 5 pieces of advice for you. First of all, allow yourself to feel your emotions. It's important to allow yourself to experience and express the full range of emotions that come with grief, including sadness, anger, frustration, confusion. This is not easy, but it's an integral part of the grieving process. Allow yourself the time and space to do that. Okay, number 2 is to practice self-care. Take care of yourself by eating well, getting enough rest, and doing something nice for yourself. An auntie of mine stopped going to choir practice after she lost her husband because it was something that they had always done together. Finally, she was asked to sing a specific part, and she went back as a favour, really, only to discover that she had missed the joy of singing terribly. She wished she had never stopped because these were her friends. She had cut herself off from the activity and the people that she loved most because she was trying to endure the grief behind closed doors. So please do something that makes your heart sing. The person that left you behind would want that. It helps you to realise that life has so much more to offer. Number 3 is to connect with others. It's tempting to hide from the world, especially if you are prone to crying like I am. Instead, reach out to friends, family, or a support group to talk about your feelings and share your experience with them. Connecting with others who have gone through similar experiences can be very helpful in the processing of grief, but it also helps them too. So open up and you will be surprised at the impact that that has. Number four is to express yourself creatively, whether it's writing, drawing, painting, or making necklaces. You know, these are all helpful ways to focus on something else, and in some cases, express and process emotions related to grief. You might want to look into art therapy, for example. Number five is to seek professional support. Consider talking to a therapist or a grief counsellor who can help you navigate the complex emotions that come with grief and provide additional support and guidance. There's no shame in reaching out, and nobody even needs to know you're going there. Just go and take advantage of it. It's important to find the techniques that work best for you and allow yourself the time and space you need to heal. Perhaps something that you never really enjoyed before is suddenly extremely calming and rewarding. So keep an open mind and be prepared to meet new people, go to new places, learn something new, and experience a different way of dealing with things. I learned many of these tips during my time working on a palliative ward back in the UK. So given that the name of this podcast is Expert Speak English, there are a lot of listeners from other areas of the globe listening too. So I couldn't help but explore how different cultures are embracing and supporting each other in the grieving process. So I would like to share some of those with you. So the Day of the Dead is a traditional Mexican holiday that celebrates and remembers loved ones who have died. It's celebrated on November the 1st and 2nd, and families and communities come together to celebrate and remember the loved ones who have died. Altars are built in homes and cemeteries and decorated with flowers, candles, and offerings of food and drink. Families may also visit graves to clean and decorate them and participate in parades and festivals. The holiday is a time to honour and celebrate the memory of those who have passed on, and to acknowledge the continued presence of death as a natural part of life. Isn't that beautiful? The second one is tear bottles. Now, this is a tradition dating back to ancient Roman and Middle Eastern cultures, in which small bottles were used to collect tears shed by mourners as a symbol of their grief and sadness. How beautiful is that? The bottles were often placed in the grave with the deceased as a symbol of the mourner's love and sadness. Oh. So the next one is Kriya. This is a Jewish mourning ritual that involves tearing a piece of clothing as a symbol of grief and mourning. Now, it's often done during the funeral service and can be performed by the immediate family members of the deceased. So the act of tearing the clothing is seen as a physical manifestation of the mourner's pain and grief. Number four is maybe a bit more common in Europe, where we have a funeral procession, and these are a common tradition in many cultures, in which mourners follow the casket or body of the deceased in a procession to the burial site or funeral home. Now, the procession is often led by a hearse, the vehicle which transports the dead person in their coffin, and may include family members, friends, and members of the community. So the act of following the body to its final resting place is a symbolic way of paying respects and saying goodbye to the deceased, getting closure. So you probably saw that in the UK when the Queen died. The tradition of following the hearse is a sign of respect, and those vehicles tend to drive very, very slowly to mirror that respect. Now, the fifth one is a wake or a vigil. Now, this tradition is where family and friends gather to keep watch over the body of the deceased before the funeral or the burial. So the gathering may take place in the family home or at a funeral home and may include prayers, readings, or other religious or cultural rituals. The wake or vigil provides an opportunity for mourners to pay their respects and offer support to the family. Now, number six is grief circles. Now, a grief circle is a more modern tradition in which people come together in a group setting to share their grief and support each other through the grieving process. The circle may be led by a trained facilitator and may include sharing stories, memories, or feelings about the deceased. And the circle provides a safe and supportive place for mourners to express their emotions and find the comfort that they need in the company of others who are also going through this grieving process. So as you can see, these are all traditions and rituals for cultures which want to be open and honest about their feelings and welcome the support of the community. So I have a summary of 9 communication tips for you when it comes to supporting grieving team members. So the first one is active listening. Listen actively and attentively to them. As we say in the UK, a problem heard is a problem halved. Now for grief, if that was the case, you would only have to tell 2 people and grief would be over. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But you know what I mean. By talking about your problems, they do feel less daunting and disastrous. Number 2 is empathy. By acknowledging and validating their feelings without judgment or criticism, you can express empathy in an authentic and supportive way. Sometimes it's best just to listen and say nothing. Number 3 is to have a non-judgmental attitude. It's really important to avoid making assumptions or judgments about the person's feelings, their reactions or coping mechanisms. Saying things like, "don't say that," or "that's not true," are actually not really very respectful. Try not to deny how people feel. Number 4 is validation. Acknowledge that person's experiences, their feelings, their pain, without trying to fix or minimise their grief. This is a great exercise in just listening attentively. Number 5 is respect. Allow the grieving person to express their emotions and grief in their own way and on their own timeline. Don't push them to talking to you. Grief comes in waves, and sometimes that wave might come at an inopportune moment. But if at all possible, try to take advantage of that window of time when it comes. Number 6, use open-ended questions. By using open-ended questions, you can encourage that person to share their feelings, memories, or stories. How are you feeling today? What's the last thing that they said to you? What is it that you miss about them most? What did they do so well that you miss? Number 7 is patience. Grief is a process. It takes time, and it's important to be patient and supportive throughout that journey, regardless of the type of grief. It's their journey, not yours. They decide the route and how long it will take. Sure, it might get a bit repetitive, but that's what they need. Number 8 is honesty. Be honest and genuine in your communication and avoid platitudes or cliches, especially the time heals, because in the moment, this can be insanely condescending and disrespectful of the grieving process and will only push you away. So be direct so that you can create strategies that allow them to perform within their emotional situation. But always be kind and considerate. Even if they are finding it difficult to manage their professional obligations, lighten the load, think outside of the box. Number 9 is observation skills. Look and listen for signs of overwhelm. Zone in on nonverbal communication, as it is often not what is said that will indicate how someone is doing, but the nonverbal stuff. Grieving styles vary considerably from person to person and from situation to situation. So try to pick up your valued team members where they are at the moment, pick up on their mood and help them pick up the pieces following the loss at their pace. Above all, be present when you are speaking to them. That's number 10. Be present when you are speaking to them and make yourself available. Let the person know that you are there for them. Given the cultural differences, the big question is, should I attend the funeral? Everyone deals with funerals differently. Everyone deals with grief differently. So it's really difficult to know whether you would be welcomed or not at a funeral. Each family and each culture may have different norms and expectations around who should be there. So here are a few tips to help you decide whether to attend or not as a colleague or a team member, for instance. The first one, the easy one, is if you get an invitation, you are welcome. So if you have received an invitation or some kind of notification about the funeral, this is a clear indication that the family would like you to attend. So however, if you have not received an invitation or notification, you're advised to check with the family before attending. See if it would be appropriate for you to be there and pay your respects, or if that would strike the immediate family as being odd or uncomfortable. Again, here is definitely a moment where you have to use your non-verbal communication skills. Number 2, think about your relationship to this person. If you had a close relationship with the deceased or their family, maybe you were their mentor, or maybe you helped them get over something, maybe you had a unique experience with them, then it's likely that you are genuinely welcome to attend the funeral. However, if your relationship was more distant, you may want to consider whether your presence would be appreciated or whether it might actually be seen as being intrusive. If you were their boss and they died of stress-related symptoms, you might want to stay away and find another way to pay your respects. Sending a wreath or donation is another way to show up without upsetting the grievers. Number 3 is culture. Now, I've mentioned this a few times, but this is an important issue. So different cultures have different expectations around funeral attendance. For example, some cultures expect all of the members of the community to attend funerals as a sign of respect and support, while others may have very strict rules around who can attend, where you should stand, and so on. So if you are unsure about the cultural expectations, do your research. Or just ask someone familiar with the culture to, you know, be honest with you about how you should behave in that situation. And the 4th and final one is timing. If you are unsure whether or not you are welcome to attend the funeral, it may be best to wait until after the funeral to reach out to the family and express your condolences then. This can give the family time and space to grieve without feeling under pressure to accommodate additional guests. This is particularly the case when the death was sudden. Can you say a few words at the funeral or wake? This is something that you might get asked. If you are asked to say a few words at the funeral or give a small speech, that might feel intimidating, but it is a huge honour. And actually, it's easier than you might think if you consider the following points. So I've got 4 little tips for you. First of all, keep it powerful but brief. Try to limit your words to maybe 3 to 5 minutes. This way, if someone else suddenly feels the urge to say a few words, they can do. Number 2, speak from the heart. A tried and tested approach is to share just one personal story or memory that illustrates the unique qualities and characteristics of the deceased in a way that fellow grievers will relate to. It's okay to make them smile in acknowledgement. Number 3 is to stay positive. While it's important to acknowledge the loss and express your condolences, try to focus on positive aspects of the deceased life and the legacy they leave behind. You are communicating that for them. Number 4, be prepared. This is the one type of speech where you are perfectly within your rights to refer to your notes. After all, you want to get this just right. It's an emotional situation, so having those notes ready could be a real lifesaver. Now, write down your points in advance and practice them beforehand out loud. This will help you to feel more confident and prepared when it is time to speak. You'll also be less emotional once you have practiced it a few times. And if you are likely to cry, then that risk is reduced. In terms of taboo topics, I think you probably know the score. It's generally best just to avoid discussing any kind of controversial or sensitive issues that could be upsetting to somebody in the audience, somebody listening. This includes topics such as politics, religion, or, you know, personal conflicts, even ones that were resolved with the deceased. It's also important to be mindful of cultural and religious customs and traditions that may dictate certain protocols or customs. If you're not sure about what to say or how to approach a particular topic, it's best to err on the side of caution and choose something else to share. And if in doubt, seek guidance from somebody else who is more familiar with the local customs and traditions or those of the family. Finally, be careful of telling jokes and anecdotes that might come across as being tactless or lacking diplomacy. You should leave them in a positive light and leave people feeling warm and fond of the person. And in this week's show notes, I do actually include some dress code tips for going to a funeral, bearing in mind that we have different cultures involved. So be diplomatic, watch your words. Refrain from making some stupid quip as to why someone is wearing black. What's the matter with you? Are you on your way to a funeral? Be aware that many women who are self-conscious about their weight wear black to cover up, to feel a little bit thinner. And others like Steve Jobs wore black for the sake of simplicity. But perhaps someone in their family really has just died. Can you imagine how embarrassed you would feel if you said that and they were grieving? The chances are that they wouldn't even put you right, but would feel trapped in their grief, which at that moment is the polar opposite of a safe space. Sink the sarcasm. So keep your sarcastic comments to yourself. Keep them in your head, or change your mindset to keep those jokes out. You don't have to say everything on your mind, so be considerate and shut up. Instead, try to find out what is on their mind, as not everyone feels that they can open up about their grief. Likewise, when I was growing up, there was an awful saying, if someone was grumpy and miserable, people would say, "Cheer up, love, worse things can happen." But if you think about it, what would be worse than your mother or your baby dying? So just be careful of lightheartedly using comments that could magnify the situation. Finally, I did say that I would talk to you very briefly about miscarriage, abortion, and child loss. So I am blessed that I have never, thank goodness, had to endure a miscarriage. When a child dies in the womb, or a cot death when children die as infants, often in their cot during sleep. But as a mother, I honestly cannot think of anything worse than losing a child. Sadly, many families do have to endure this loss. And actually, if someone chooses to have an abortion, many of the emotions around that loss are the same, with the added guilt factor that is difficult to shrug off. And every pram, playground, and car seat can trigger a surge of grief. You never get over the loss of a child. In fact, the love of a lost one is always a part of who you are and part of your past. No doubt that individual has shaped you as an individual. So the aim is not to forget your loved one, but to learn to live with your loss and find a way forward. That can feel like an endurance test that you simply don't have the energy to face, yet alone conquer. And being sad and down is a part of the process. Let yourself be in that down state. And remember, for child loss, there are specialist counsellors that deal with that. So feel free to reach out to those, because the other mothers in that group would benefit from you being there. So grief is a process by which we heal, and staying strong through grief, regardless of which type of grief, isn't about not crying or not being sad. It's about allowing yourself to work through uncomfortable emotions so that you can heal. Now, in the show notes, I do outline the phases of grief from Kubler-Ross, but I'll just give you a very quick run through. So the stages are popularly remembered with the acronym DABDA. So it's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And like I say, if you want to know more about that, go to the webpage and there's more information there. So convey support and caring. Help them cope. Before I go, if you feel uncomfortable talking about grief, it might be tempting to say the wrong thing in a hope to drop or change the subject, which is actually rather cowardly and shallow. I would like you to be mindful of minimising grief with comments like, how old were they? Which implies, well, she's had a good life, only to be expected, really. And whilst this is true, none of us are getting any younger, right? And yet this question, or actually it's an implied statement, isn't it really, is still especially painful when someone so close to you dies or is incredibly ill in palliative care or in intensive care, and they seem to be closer to death than life. So why is Coco talking about death and grief? Is she okay? So you might be thinking, why on earth is the usually upbeat Coco talking about death? Well, the truth of the matter is that this Easter, we had a wake-up call. And as I record this podcast, my own parents are fine, but someone very dear to me is in intensive care. I feel powerless. And I was wondering about the children of this amazing woman and how their employers would help them to cope should she not make it through. It got me thinking about how we cope with grief in other cultures, and I felt the urge to share this with you, not on the first Monday of the month, as I promised you just a few weeks ago. Grief does take a toll on your performance, mine too. It affects your ability to get things done, because as well as dealing with your own emotions, we want to be strong for our children, partners, and clients. But we cannot do everything. And so, my dear and valued listeners, I hope that you will be flexible and empathetic with me. There are lots of resources and tips on the webpage for this show in the show notes, so you can go back to that should you need it. Because death is inevitable, but it is also impossible, or seemingly so, until you start taking care of yourself, until you start meeting people, until you find someone to talk to. And if that person is a professional rather than a friend or family member, someone that you do not feel guilty talking to again and again about your grief, then so be it. Grief is the toughest emotion of all, and I wish that I could bear you of this misery. But ultimately, we all lose someone we love in life. And as we get older, we have to face grief more often. It doesn't get easier, though. Grief is hard. And some people find it difficult to talk about their emotions. I get that. It's not always easy, especially if it stirs up emotions of your own grief. My request to you as a team member, leader, or employer is to be kind and considerate to those who are grappling with their emotions during a phase of grief. Likewise, should you have to face grief yourself, be kind and patient with yourself too. Take care of yourself and confront those thoughts and feelings. You don't need to feel lonely as you face your new reality of life after losing a loved one. There is no need for embarrassment. This is a difficult journey. Don't go it alone. So treat this as a life experience, an opportunity to help, to make a difference, to make someone feel able to talk about their true feelings. Even if they do break down emotionally, that's natural. And if we give each other the freedom to grieve as they wish on their own schedule, the chances are that they will recover faster because they are embracing their grief rather than trying to ignore it. So Coco's communication challenge for you this week is to think about people that you know who have lost someone. It might not have been recently. It might have been some time ago. But as we learned today, grief doesn't have an on and off switch. It could be a miscarriage, a parent, a relative, a friend, even a pet or an ex-husband. These losses are all grief. Just reach out to them this week. Check in on them and see how they are getting on. And you can use some of these tips that I gave you. I'll just recap on them for you. Active listening, empathy, have a non-judgmental attitude, validation, respect, open-ended questions, patience, and honesty. and observation skills. So thank you, fellow humans. If you know of anybody that is grieving or has a grieving team member, then it would be a pragmatic act of kindness to share this podcast episode, and perhaps you can share it with your HR manager too. It would make my day if they were to put this episode about this rather sensitive topic on their intranet site for managers to refer to when grief affects one of their staff members, as grief is a matter of when, not if. Remember that grief does not last forever. Life goes on. So be the kind of manager that makes work life less of an endurance test and instead secure that psychological safety that makes your organisation irresistible to your staff and a place that they feel proud and loyal enough to recommend. Because people create culture, starting with you as a compassionate leader. Thank you very much for listening today. It was a tough one to do, and thank you. It's Corinne Wilhelm from the Experts Speak English podcast, brought to you by English Speaking Experts. Goodbye.